Great. And you probably, some of you that don't know, today we are hoping to create a trail system from here to Silver Reef. And that's, you know, a big plan we have. Loanne's been setting up that and is also the one who put this together for us today. So let's move on to Jim, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the history.
Thank you. I'm very grateful for your interest in Silver Reef, Harrisburg, this house, and my great-grandfather, John Kempel, who was credited with being the first to discover the silver here. I want to tell you just a little bit about his background. And in doing so, some of the information I have is firsthand to me from my grandfather. Some of the information was taken from a couple of publications. One of them is called My Story of Silver Reef by Wilma Beale, and her son Ray is with us here today. Another one was called Saints, Silver, and Sinners by Proctor and Schertz, and I believe that that's still available for purchase up at the Wells Fargo Museum. It's a wonderful book that tells all about this area and gives a great account of John Kempel and his associations here. There are several stories about the discovery of silver here, and Wilma Beale pointed out a couple, two or three in her book. One of them involved a man that was traveling through this area in the winter, and he stayed overnight with someone that had a sandstone fireplace. And as the fire was roaring in that fire that night, and the family was all gathered around, he noticed that there were liquid metal oozing out of that sandstone fireplace. He took a sample and found that it was pure silver. Another story involves a grindstone that was found in the streets of Pioche after it was abandoned. There was an assayer that moved to Pioche during the mining boom there. His name was Murphy, and because of the way that he assayed and gave a favorable report to everything that he assayed, they called him Metalliferous Murphy. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. So the miners one night in a saloon, in high spirits, decided that they would play a trick on him to see if he was honest or not, because he said everything had mineral in it. So they took a piece of an old grindstone and crushed it into sand, took it to Murphy to have him analyze it. Murphy found that there was actually silver in there, but he kept that sample and left town. He told them that it had a high content of silver, and the story is that they rode him out of town on a rail, or tarred and feathered him, because they didn't believe him, because silver doesn't come in sandstone. And so Murphy tracked down where the sandstone came from and found it was here at Silver Reef. Probably the most credible story, though, is that of John Kempel, my great-grandfather. He came through this area in 1866, and his purpose wasn't really to stay here, but during the course of his journey with the team of horses that he was taking to California, he got caught in some bad weather here and took a room right here in this house. And I wonder which room he took. You know, I'm thinking that he might have had a little niche in the corner with the rest of the Orson B. Adams family gathered around these fireplaces. But the story that I heard from my grandfather was that he rented a room here. And John Kempel was a prospector and a miner. He left home at the age of 15 back in West Virginia and came west after a disagreement with his stepmother to follow the California gold rush when he was only 15 years old. Now, he went to California and looked for gold. He did find some, but not the big strike. He probably found enough to sustain himself or to maintain his existence, and then moved around in other parts of the West, including Alaska. And his venture in Alaska was before the great Alaskan gold rush. That didn't come until about 1890s sometime. But he had been in Alaska for some time and found some gold there too. But once again, it wasn't a big strike. It was just enough to maintain himself. He returned here to Silva. Oh, I was going to mention that while he was here in Silver Reef, he did find a sample of silver. And being a prospector, he probably found that through a process called panning, and found a little bit of float in the bottom of a creek bed or a wash somewhere. And I'm thinking it might have been right here in Ash Creek that ran down through here. But that was not the big find, but he did know that there was silver here. He didn't think at that time that there was a great deal of silver, and so he was in and out of Harrisburg and traveled between Nevada, spent some time in Pioche and Caliente, the Panaca area, and then came back here. And he came back here to the Orson B. Adams house, and this was in 1871. He came back here and stayed here again, and this is when he filed his first claim. He left again, not finding a great deal of silver, and came back again in 1874. And that's when he filed the first claim that was recorded with, I don't know who you record them with, Washington County, I guess. And he gave a description of that, and this is how we located the claim. He said that it was, let me read it exactly the way he wrote it. He said, said location commencing at a monument and notice placed on a ledge about 300 yards southwest of O.B. Adams' house and running from thence in a monthly in a northerly direction, 1,500 feet. This ledge shall be known as the Pride of the West ledge and the Kemple Company. And the location was recorded June 26, 1874. Locator, John Kemple. Also that year, he met a young lady named Amelia Leicht, L-E-I-C-H-T. Amelia was living in this area also and had been an immigrant to Utah with the Moron Pioneers. He married Amelia in 1874, and it's a little interesting because John was 39 years old at that time, and Amelia was only 18. Now, in this day and age, we'd probably raise our eyebrows a little bit about that big age difference, but for some reason, they fell in love and were married. Then their first son was born in 1876, and that was my grandfather, John Orson Kemple. I suspect they named him Orson after Orson B. Adams because of the relationship that John had had there. Probably because of prodding from his Mormon wife, John joined the Mormon Church. I don't think that he was ever actively engaged in the church or the gospel throughout his life. And the reason I say that is because his children did not grow up with much of a Mormon upbringing. In fact, my grandfather, John Orson, and his wife joined the church later on. And my father didn't join the church. He wasn't raised in the church either and didn't join until after my two older brothers were born. Now, in 1879, John moved his family, which had grown to two children by then, John and George, and he moved them to the South Star area up around Beaver. I think that's in the mountains just southwest of Beaver. Maybe some of you BLM people know a little bit more about it than I do, but I want to get one of those BLM maps that outline everything and see exactly where that South Star is. They lived there for 8 years, and back in 1885, John came back here to Silver Reef with his family. At that time, John Orson was 9 years old. I want to show a picture of him here. This is John Orson at the age of 9, and you're welcome to pass that around if you'd like and take a look. John Orson has a delightful autobiography, about his boyhood here at Silver Reef in Harrisburg. That can be found on the Washington County Historical Society site. Mr. Cannon put that on there for us a few months ago. And if you'd like to look him up, you can look at it and read his biography. So John and George were here, but while they had lived up in South Star, the Kemples had three daughters born there, Ada, Emma, and Effie. And then when after they had moved back here to Silver Reef, they had one other child born. His name was Grover Cleveland Kemple, probably after a president, I would imagine. And he was born in 1887, 2 years later. I want to talk just a little bit about my grandfather, John Orson. I mentioned him briefly, and he married a girl from Leeds. Back in 1867, I think it was, the first survey and town layout of Leeds occurred. My great-grandfather on another side of the family was Charles Albert Connolly. He lived in Harrisburg at the time with his family. His wife was Jane Rowley. They were one of the first seven settlers to move to Leeds, and they settled the town up there. My grandfather, John Orson Kemple, and my grandmother, Kate May Connolly, lived within 2 or 3 miles of each other for years and grew up and never knew each other. It wasn't until after they had moved to Chloride back in the late 1800s, I think it was about 1897, when they moved to Chloride, Arizona, which is in Mojave County, just northwest of Kingman, that they met and were married. And there's their marriage picture of John Orson Kemple and Kate May Connolly. As a young boy, I can remember many trips coming up here to Leeds to visit friends that my grandmother had grown up with here. Also, I wanted to show a picture of John's wife, Amelia, and this would have been probably around a few years after they were married, and I'm not sure where that was taken, but just from the looks of the terrain there, I'm thinking it might have been in a beach area or somewhere like that. They lived in Los Angeles for a short period, and maybe it might have been down there. It was 1891 when John Kemple left Silver Reef in search of more metal, gold, silver, whatever he could find, and moved to Mojave County, Arizona. He found gold down there, and a little town grew up called Kemple Camp. It's a matter of history down there now, and it's located about 30 miles northwest of Kingman, and about 3 miles off Highway 93 on the south side of the highway. I read a little story about John Kemple while he was there, and there was a man that lived across on the north side of that valley that could see John Kemple's camp every night, and he could see that there were lights on in the cabin. One night he could see that the lights were out, and so it alarmed him a little bit. The next morning he sent his son down there to see what was wrong. His son went to the cabin and found John laying on his bed, very sick. And so the young man thought that he would make John some coffee. He took the coffee pot off the stove, took it outside to pour out the old coffee, and found a little round furry ball in the coffee. He examined that closer and found that it was a tarantula. Somehow, John had left the lid up on that coffee pot, and that tarantula had crawled in there and got cooked with the coffee. And John had drank the coffee, and it made him very sick. The boy took him to White Hills area, and after about a week or two of rehab, John regained his strength and was able to go back to the mine. He did find gold there, but once again, it wasn't a big strike, unfortunately for us descendants. He lived there for a few years, and then after he got a little older, he was unable to work, and so because of his health, and so he lived with his children all around the area. He lived for a time at Good Springs, Nevada, sometime at in Los Angeles and San Diego for short periods of time, and then back to a place in northern Arizona called Gold Road. There's a big gold mine at Gold Road, Arizona. And to give you an idea of where it is, it's just north of Oatman. If anyone's been to Oatman, if you just go a little bit north, maybe a couple of miles, you'd find Gold Road. My father worked there too when I was an infant back in 1836. You saw the picture of Amelia back in 1936. Let me get the right century here. During the time that they were in chloride, Amelia got a little bit disgruntled with John's continual prospecting, and so she divorced him and married a man named John Moore. We never knew John Moore. I didn't anyway, but I did know Amelia. Amelia was still alive when I was a young boy. I was 10 years old when she died, and I knew her. Beg your pardon?
That was your grandmother?
That was my great-grandmother. The mother of John Kemple. The wife of John Kemple. So I did know her, but she ran a cafe and boarding house in chloride for a while, and I have a copy from a Kingman newspaper that showed a little advertisement, and it listed all white help. Now that would have been common in those days, wouldn't it? Yeah, not now though. Then in Gold Road, Arizona, she also ran a restaurant there for a short time. John died in 1918 at the age of 82, and I want to show a couple of pictures of him in his older age. Here's a picture that was probably taken maybe a year or two before he died. You'll notice that his hands are kind of deformed and probably from arthritis or something like that. You can pass that around, Eric. And then here's one other picture. This shows John in a little game with his grandchildren. The little boy on the left is my father, John Raymond Kemple, and the little girl dressed like an Indian on the right is my aunt, Ida Kemple Cassidy. But once again, if you look at John, you'll see that he was an old man. He never shaved. He had a long beard and looked pretty unkempt in those days. Amelia lived until 1946. No, let's see, till 46. I was 10 years old, but I remember her very well. She was a very quiet lady. I remember, though, that during that time, in her older age, we were riding in a car one time, and my mother was driving, and we were right about where the old U&I sugar beet factory is now. They call it the Opera House in St. George, and the car stalled. And mother said, "I think the car has a vapor lock." Now, some of you who are old enough might remember that in those days, that was not too uncommon in cars to get a vapor lock. Well, what it meant was that the gas wasn't fueling into the carburetor properly. And she said, "We'll have to sit here." Amelia said, "If the car's on fire, get the children out." I remember that very distinctly. The car was not on fire. My father, John Raymond Kemple, was the last in our Kemple family that was a true miner. He was a miner. He worked in mines. He grew up at the Yellow Pine Mine just outside of Good Springs, Nevada, and went to school in Good Springs, became a miner. And for some time, when I was a young boy, maybe around between 10 and 13 years old, my father leased the Apex Mine in the mountains west of St. George. He ran that mine for a few years, and I went there with him several times. And he even took me clear to the bottom of that mine, which was in those days in a shaft that went down 900 feet. You can pass that one around, Eric. And so I got into the mines a little bit with my father and my grandfather, John Orson Kemple, but I knew that it was not for me. One other picture that I want to show you is, actually there's two more. This one is a picture of the children of John Raymond Kemple, all lined up. That's my mother and my brothers, all but one brother who wasn't born at the time that picture was taken. And the reason I'm showing it is because after the mine, after the mining experience in our family, not one of these boys went into mining. That picture was taken in St. George, and I would have been around 13 or 14 years old. I am this one, 1, 2, 3, fourth from the left, counting my mother. Fourth person from the left, counting my mother. And that was taken in St. George. And if you'll look carefully at the picture, you'll notice right behind the smallest boy is John Orson Kemple sitting there. He didn't want to move while we took that picture, so he got in the picture too. And then one last picture of John Kemple's descendants. Here it is right here. This was taken at the John Kemple family reunion in St. George in 1981. The pictures cropped just a little bit. There were a few more people than that in the picture that got cut out. John Kemple led what I think was quite an exciting life. I can't comprehend a 15-year-old child leaving home. He just went out to the field, saddled his horse, and took off. Now, I imagine that he probably joined with other people who were also heading west at that time, because there was quite a migration west because of the California gold rush at that time. John died in 1918, and Amelia died in 1946, but she lived to the age of 90. And I think one of the reasons that I was able to have somewhat of a relationship and knowledge of her was because she did live that long. So that's about all I have as far as background is concerned. We wanted to talk just a little bit about the site of John's claim that he made in 1874. From the book Silver, Sinners and Saints, it gives a good description, the one that I just read to you that was filed with the county when he made that claim. About 15 or 20 years ago, I went to that site and found the claim. The monument was still on the ledge that John put it on, and it's still there now. And we assume that that's the monument that John built. In those days, tobacco came in a can, and I remember one brand was Prince Albert, because most of the miners used these Prince Albert cans to put their mining claim papers in and then put it inside of the monument and covered rocks on top of it, so that if anyone came there, they could dig out the Prince Albert can and see whose claim it was. The monument is still there, and we assume that it was John's monument that he built. The mine, when I first went there, was about, it had a shaft about 8 or 10 feet across and probably around 15 feet deep. The mine has been filled in now. And I think that the state probably did that for safety of people that might be hiking or otherwise doing things in this area, so they wouldn't fall in the shaft. If anyone would like to walk with me, as soon as we're through here, we can walk down the road and I can show you where the claim was. But because of the nature of the property there being in a reserve, we're not going to hike right up to the site, but I can show you up the ridge where John filed his claim.
How deep was the mine, you know?
I couldn't hear you, sir.
How deep was the mine?
How deep?
Oh, about 15 feet was all. And I don't think he found anything there. And we might wonder, what causes a prospector to stop and look? It's discoloration of the rocks and the property, the ground around there. I asked my father that one time. I said, how would I know if I were out in the desert and saw and could find some gold or silver? And he said, look for discoloration. Usually probably an orangish or blackish discoloration, which would indicate an iron deposit, because most of these other minerals come with iron deposits and things like that in the ground that you can find. I don't know what it was that John saw, but he was an experienced prospector. I suspect he saw some black in the sandstone, is what I suspect, because silver in its natural state is black in its ore state before it is. Oh, one other thing I wanted to show you too. I have here two coins that were actually made. These are pure silver coins that were made with the last of the available silver that came out of Silver Reef. These were actually made with Silver Reef silver. If you would like to see them closer, I'll be glad to pass them around as long as I'm sure to get them back. They're not worth a great deal of money. I think silver is about $30 an ounce now. And each one of those contains 1 ounce of silver. My mother saw them for sale at one time and bought one for all of her boys. She has 8 sons, and she bought one for each of us. The one that has Dixie College on it is the one she bought for us. I bought the one that has the Wells Fargo Museum on it, and I think I bought that up at the Wells Fargo Museum many years ago when they still had some. I don't think they have them now for sale, but those are the... Those were actually made with Silver Reef silver, and to me, that's quite significant.
Yes. I have a question about the rocks in this area. Sometimes you see it with a lot of green in it. Is that not silver?
You know, I don't think so.
Copper.
Yeah, probably copper. My father had the Apex mine, and they mined copper out of that. And I have some beautiful bluish-green specimens that he took out of that mine. And I've still got them sitting on a shelf in my house now. And they're all bluish green, and they're high-grade copper.
When you walk along the White Reef, you often find rock with green in it. In fact, you even find some rock that looks like it's fossilized stems of leaves or branches.
You know,
what's your relationship between copper and silver?
I don't know. I've not ever even taken a class in geology, so I'm not sure about that. Maybe someone else knows more than I do. I didn't go into the mines, except as a guest.
A little bit. I think chemically, it's kind of the same process that went on geologically, that there was dissolved copper in groundwater, and it got basically absorbed into the plant material when it was laid down. And I think the same thing happens with uranium, too, which is why like uranium mines often follow... old log jams in stream beds. But I think essentially the same thing happened here, that the organic material in the plant absorbed the silver or the copper, and so then that's why the plant fossils have the copper content in them or the silver content in them.
Anyone have any other questions? Or comments? Yes.
Question then. So your great-grandfather staked the first claims, and as I recall, they organized a mining district.
Yes, he did.
Orson Adams shown as one of the organizers on that district.
That's right. In 1971, he organized the Union Mining District,
right.
And it was based on a claim, but I'm not sure if it was the same claim that he claimed in 1974, or 1874. But on that first claim, he listed several people. There was quite a group of people that he listed on that claim, and it was permissible in those days.
Sure. And they typically did that.
Yes, and maybe they didn't even know they were on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think some were his friends from St. George.
Right. But he never really made a lot of money out of that.
No, he made money, and right here at Silver Reef, when he came back in 1885, it's unclear whether he was mining himself or if he was working for someone for wages. I don't know what he was doing. But they lived here for 9 years, I think, before they left for Arizona. Yes, sir.
Where was that pride of the whatever claim?
The claim?
Yeah, where is that?
It's 100 yards southwest of this house.
Okay, that one.
Yes. And those who would like can walk down the road with me and I'll show you exactly where it is. Although we won't be able to go right to the site, but I can describe what it looks like. In fact, I already have pretty much.
Back in 1994, there was a gate in the fence and the pickup truck up to the original site and looked it all over. I remember almost getting stuck. I had to build up some rocks under my wheels to get out of there.
Uh-huh.
A little bit difficult.
Yes.
I don't know why they don't have an access. access through the fence.
Well, I think it's probably because it's a preserve now. There's endangered and threatened species in there that they don't want bothered.
In several places.
Yeah. And while you're talking about that, can you imagine what this place looked like in 1866? That beautiful road was not here. That paved road wasn't here. Just trails, and just they would just ride through the desert on their way to St. George or their way to Parowan or Cedar City. There were no roads. Yes.
And just as you, after you turn the corner, you look off the right down there, and you can see the old stone abutments and the wooden cover over where the wagons went over that trail. And also another thing, you said something about the color of the when you're looking for things. Last week we went out and the Harrisburg ATV Club went out into the Arizona Strip, and there's a place out there that on the cliff that you have the reddish and black volcano and so forth, volcanic stuff. And then one place there's a large area, I'd say of about an acre of yellowish soil going up almost up to the volcanic ridge. And there's a cave up there, and the pioneers used to go in there and collect oil. That's yellow soil indicates that it's a product, that there's some oil down in there somewhere. And they used to go up there and collect that oil to lubricate their wagon wheels and things like that.
That's amazing. And your little illustration here reminds me that this entire southern Utah area and northern Arizona area is just rich, full of incidents like that, full of places just like you're describing, and things that are very interesting geological wise. Any other questions? Well, thank you for your attention. I appreciate it, and I hope that it's been interesting for you.
Thank you.
Okay.